Are you filled with fear, doubt, worry about the future of our country? Do you feel the urgency to act before it's too late? If yes, then this podcast is for you. It's time for us all to confront the critical issues threatening our nation's fabric, our democracy itself, irregardless of our political stance. If you're ready to face reality, handle the tough questions, and find real solutions, then here's your host, Debbie Lynn Molyneux.
Welcome to the Terrified Nation podcast. I'm your host, Debbie Lynn Molyneux. Can we save it? That's what we're exploring in this podcast series. And for me, the answer is a resounding yes, we can. And we must. This show is where we explore alternatives to being afraid. And in the first five episodes, I offered a background framework that if you haven't listened to, I recommend that you do. And you'll know if you've done that, that I like to start each show with a question that we'll explore together. And today's question is, how do we best serve our nation? Well, today we'll be talking with veteran, husband, father, and reformer, Eric H. Bronner. He's the founder and COO of Veterans for All Voters. Now, Eric is an optimist, but he's also a realist. And in 2021, he and a group of friends wondered if there were any organizations where veterans worked for nonpartisan reforms to support voters. It was a way for him to continue his lifetime of service and invite other veterans to do the same. Because like more than 50% of veterans, Eric is a lifelong independent voter who continues to uphold his oath to the Constitution. Making elections more competitive and accessible is how he currently does this work. Now, I had an interview scheduled with Eric for my other project, AmericanFuture.us. And the morning of the interview, I just asked if we could shift the focus to include the Terrified Nation podcast. And Eric, being a team player, agreed. So welcome to the Terrified Nation podcast.
Hi, Debbie Lynn. Thank you so much for that kind and humbling introduction. I'm excited to be here and excited for our conversation.
Me too. Well, let's jump right in. So as I go through the questions with you today, keep in mind, we're looking for what is your preferred future, not what you think is possible, not what you think is likely. What is it that you actually prefer for your future? So the first thing that we're going to do is some time travel within your current life.
All right.
And so we're going to recommend somewhere between 2 and 20 years. And what sounds about right for you?
Somewhere around 10 years.
All right, 10 years. We're going to jump forward into 2034. So as we get going here in the time machine, let's go ahead and close your eyes for a second and take a couple of deep breaths. And when we get out of the time machine, we're going to be in 2034, and you're going to be observing your future self and responding to these questions about what you see. And so we're pulling into 2034. Ding! Here we are. We're going to get out of our time machine. And this first question, I think, is simple. Where are you in 2034? What do you see?
Yeah, thanks, Devlin. And you haven't aged at all in 10 years. It's amazing. I don't know exactly physically where we will be. And I have three children and a wife. And I think we will probably be living somewhere else. I will be serving in national office in Congress or the U.S. Senate. It's a lifelong dream of mine. It's a big reason why I'm doing the work that I started 12 years ago.
So can you describe physically like what you see around you? It's probably not St. Louis, you said?
Probably not. Let's just say Washington, D.C.
What's your neighborhood like?
We live in a city. It's a very diverse, eclectic neighborhood. Maybe we're not too far from Little Ethiopia. The city has addressed some of its issues thanks to a successful ballot initiative back in 2024, Petition 83, that helped open up primaries and use ranked choice voting. So you have a much more representative government in Washington, D.C. that people feel much more ownership of. They see people who reflect not only some of their external attributes, but they see people in office who are independent thinkers and problem solvers and serving for all the right reasons, not serving to build their own platform or to aggregate more power for themselves or their party.
And so as you observe yourself being a member of Congress and you're living in DC and you've got this eclectic neighborhood, what is it that you're most proud of?
I'm proud, from a work standpoint, I'm proud of that we, Veterans for All Voters, were a big part of reforming the system, and we were able to pull through that really dark time. And thankfully, enough people woke up to the reality that the parties were just aggregating power for themselves, and the people got smart, and the people in enough states passed reforms that changed the system and made this representative democracy more representative. And I'm really proud of the role that we played in that.
So you started that section with work I'm most proud of. What about non-work? What about personally?
I'm still happily married and have a great relationship with my three kids who are all adults now. A couple of them have started families of their own. We have grandchildren. I've grown as a person in that. In my family history, we have a number of people who thought they could change the world. And in many ways, they did. And in other ways, their family felt the brunt of them being so passionate about their mission that their family left behind or forgotten. And I'm grateful that kind of through, you know, good therapy and a good church community, faith community, good friendships, that we navigated some tough times as a family and we're in a much healthier place together than we were 10 years ago.
Since you just kind of touched on the family dynamic, previous generations wanting to change the world, would you like to share that story a little bit? Because I think it's a compelling story.
I assume you're referencing my grandfather, the late Dr. Bronner.
I am.
So my dad's dad, who was a raised Orthodox Jewish as a soap maker in Germany and came over to the United States in the 1920s. And in many ways, he has the immigrant success story that Americans love to tell. Along the way, he experienced incredible loss and tragedy, including both of his parents were killed in the Holocaust. And he lost his first wife to mental illness. And we don't know exactly how she died and left him with three young children. And he was sent to a mental institution in Elgin, Illinois, and escaped from that mental institution on the third attempt and made his way to Los Angeles, literally without a penny to his name, and started making soap in his tenement apartment building because that's what he knew how to do, and spoke. And Pershing Square in Los Angeles was a place where free thinkers could get out and speak. And he would literally get on a soapbox and give speeches. And he wanted to unite Spaceship Earth. He felt like he had an epiphany somewhere along the way, maybe in the mental hospital, that he called all one God faith, and he tried to get his message out to the world. People got tired of hearing him speaking, so he put his message on the bottles of the soap. And then in spite of him not trying to be a successful business person, the soap really took off in the 60s, and it became the number one selling natural organic soap in the world. Part of my legacy is inheriting the good and the other things that come with a grandfather who was, my dad would say, eccentric geniuses don't make good fathers. My dad was in over 12 different foster homes between the age of 7 or 9 and when he left for college. And so that's the family legacy that's challenging. My grandfather did change the world. The product, it's a public benefit corporation. It's an example of constructive capitalism. It's an example of the good we can do with the resources that we're given. He defined constructive capitalism as giving back to the workers and the earth from whom your profits are made. I'm proud to say our families carried on that legacy by turning the company into a B corporation in California and operating in many ways more like a nonprofit than a for-profit.
I have been using Dr. Bronner's soap for far longer than I've known you. And so thank you for sharing that story with the podcast, because it puts in perspective both the challenge of this kind of work-life balance that I think Americans struggle with more than any other culture, but also this desire to do good for people that we don't even know. and contribute to the world at large. And sometimes there's a private cost to that, such as your father experienced. And so,
yes.
I love that in your future, what you're most proud of is that you still have an intact family with great, deep relationships.
Early in starting Veterans for All Voters, our pitch, our slide deck presentation to looking for seed funding to launch. And I shared the deck with my wife, Hallie, and in there, I had a photo of her and my kids and talked about how important family was to me and how I was doing this work for my family. And in a grace-filled way, she said, you know, it just doesn't really feel like that on this end of things. And that's something, you know, I could either ignore. And honestly, it's not as if I've arrived or figured this all out. I'm still working on this balance, right? But trying to figure out how to do something really that feels impossible and also taking good care of those closest to me at the same time.
Thank you for sharing what you're most proud of and how that formed in you. The next question in our interview, as you're observing your future self as a member of Congress living in DC, how will you spend your day?
They'll be full, right? Lots of meetings, hearings, constituent meetings. I look forward to being a representative who truly knows and represents their district well and being a person of the people, not ever being above the people that I'm supposedly serving. I think that was one of the most toxic things about politics 10 years ago was it just felt so ego driven. And even good people serving in Congress would tell you they felt forced to have to dial for dollars because it was just all about the money. And thankfully, we were able to reform, overturn Citizens United through the 28th Amendment. And we have some public financing for campaigns. So representatives no longer have to spend so much time raising money. We can spend more time caring for our constituents, which is what we're supposed to be doing.
The coach in me is coming out. So you just talked about your work life again. So tell me how your family fits into your day.
Sure. Well, so our kids are all grown at this point and they're out of the house. It's Hallie and I. She has her own thriving business. She's using her gifts to serve and help women with design elements, making their homes and their offices more beautiful. And that's a passion of hers. Faith is incredibly important to us. So we've been members of a faith community our entire married life. And we're really excited to be a part of a vibrant faith community in Washington, D.C., and part of smaller groups where we know our friends and neighbors well and live out what we say we believe.
How does yourself feel in 2034? What do you observe about your future self?
I feel a lot of gratitude to get to do the work I dreamed of serving as an elected official and help make really important decisions that honors my constituents, honors the integrity that I hope to bring to this office. It has a collegial spirit in the way we're making policy. Now, this wasn't even possible 10 years ago because the conflict profiteers, as you called them, were so good at polarizing us for their own selfish gain that problem solving wasn't even possible. And now it is. I really enjoy being a part of solving the biggest problems our country is facing.
As you look at your future self, what can you identify as your 3, maybe 5 priority values or qualities?
I mentioned faith and how we live it out so that it's authentic and genuine and is a way that invites people in to be curious. Integrity, being the same person no matter who I'm with, whether I'm with a homeless person on the streets of DC or with the president, I'm the same person. And then independent thinking, thinking back 10 years ago, we were stuck in this place of toxic groupthink where the voices that got amplified seemed to be some of the craziest voices at that time. There was a lack of independent thinking, and people who would try to push back against narratives oftentimes were ostracized. No grace was given to people. And a lot of it was superficial virtue signaling, doing and saying all the right things. But then you dig a little bit deeper, and some of the people 10 years ago who looked so shiny and new and hopeful, and there was no integrity involved.
Anything else come to mind?
Collaboration. I really pride myself in being able to work with people from all over the political spectrum. I really believe in that team of rivals approach where there's no one side or no one party that has all the answers or all the solutions. So let's get the best thinkers together in a room to argue about what is possible, what's achievable, what's powerful for moving our country forward in a way that benefits the majority or as many people as possible.
As you look around, you're living in DC, you have this diverse, eclectic neighborhood that's close to Ethiopian food. I'm assuming there's a story there.
There is.
Yeah. So what, beyond Ethiopian food, what does the community that supports this future need to include for you?
The community includes many people who reflect the values that I just shared, right? Faith-based community, but also neighbors who might look and think very differently from me to help keep me grounded. We don't want to live in some gated community that's in a bubble, removed from people. We've been in both, and we prefer to be in neighborhoods that help keep us grounded, surrounded with good friends and close advisors who know me warts and all, and they're willing to speak the truth in love to me and vice versa, and have open hearts and open minds toward each other and living as our authentic selves.
So your community then needs to include this level of authenticity. You can authentically be yourself and feel like you belong.
Yes.
Do you want to go into the Ethiopian food?
The first time I ever had it was in Little Ethiopia in DC. Okay. My cousin had studied in Ethiopia for 6 months, and I picked him up from the airport, and we went straight to an Ethiopian restaurant. He could speak a little Amharic, so they gave us the royal treatment, and it was just a super memorable experience. And there's still words he taught me that have stuck with me since that time. And then one of my wife's closest and dearest friends adopted a boy from Ethiopia. And so I think we just, for many reasons, have a soft spot in our hearts toward Ethiopia.
I love that. That is wonderful. Well, we're down to the last question. So we're going to suck ourselves back into 2024 real quick.
Okay.
So don't get whiplash. But this last question is really like, let's talk a little bit about what you are doing today in 2024 to create this future that you see for yourself and for the nation. So do a deep dive into Veterans for All Voters. How did it start? How did you do this?
It started in a collaborative way, putting together a kitchen cabinet of about 10 veterans from across the country and across the political spectrum to see whether or not there was a need for yet another veteran service organization. There's over 40 or 50,000 working specifically on election reforms. As you know, Debbie Lynn, there's maybe about 10,000 pro-democracy, civic, bridge building, or nonpartisan reform organizations, right? And if there was someone else bringing those two worlds together in a meaningful way, we would have happily joined them. But when we convened this kitchen cabinet, this was 3 years ago, 2021, after a little bit of time and research, there really wasn't anyone being very intentional with bringing veterans in to use their trusted voice in a way that is political, but not partisan. In a way that is reforming, not dividing or for partisan gain or short-term gain, but really on a much longer-term reform vision.
So what is it that you're looking to do here in 2024? Is there anything that you can or are doing today to influence or co-create that community? So you've mentioned, as we have done the backward casting, this Measure 83 in DC.
So Petition 83 is a great example of the work that Veterans for All Voters does in partnership with an entire ecosystem of effort. So Petition 83 is a ballot initiative, ballot amendment in Washington, D.C. For open primaries, get rid of partisan primary elections, and use ranked choice voting in both the primary and the general election. Sometimes it's called majority choice. It's something we know from other cities and states that have used majority choice methods. It really improves democracy on so many levels by making it more representative, more participatory. People are more excited because they have more choices. And in every other industry, we love choices and competition. But in politics, we've been told by the two private political parties that you can either choose Coke or Pepsi or more Coke or more Pepsi. What would you like, Coke or Pepsi?
And when somebody pops up and says, I want some root beer.
Right. Yeah, sorry, if you want root beer, you're going to end up selling more Coke. And that would be really bad because we know your second choice is Pepsi, but you can't even express that second choice. Whatever you do, don't drink root beer.
Or cream soda. That's my other favorite. What you're doing right now in preparation for moving to DC as a member of Congress is you're trying to help the residents of DC right now have more choices, more voice in their local elections.
Yes, absolutely. More choices, more voices. One of the leaders of Petition 83 is a mutual friend of ours and someone who I really admire and who inspires me on so many levels, but lifelong independent voter. She lives her values. That's who she authentically is. And she wants to be able to fully participate in her taxpayer-funded elections. So she helped start Petition 83. There's some other great organizations working on this behind the scenes. The Dr. Brunner's Family Foundation has helped with some funding. These ballot campaigns are expensive, and sometimes that's used against us, that there's all this money coming to change the system. And we love to point out that it's 10 to 20 times as much money is going into protecting and maintaining the status quo. Some places it's 100-fold. So yes, it costs money to reform our broken system, and that requires partners and funders from all over the country.
Yeah, for folks who are listening to this podcast and they have more curiosity about ranked choice voting, it's also called instant runoff. It's also called
Majority choice voting.
One of the things that I've learned from you and from others in the democracy reform space is how much money we spend on not the initial primary election, but keeping people from voting in the primary if it's a closed primary state. If the primary ends up with a runoff because nobody got 50% plus one, so you end up having three elections when you could just do it once.
Once? You could. Yes.
The tax savings,
yes.
From a taxpayer standpoint, that is a huge bonus for me to be able to say, I like this person the best, but I like this person the second best and this person the third best, and know that my voice is going to count.
Yes. Majority choice voting methods reward common sense problem solvers. They reward collaborative campaigners, because if you're not everyone's first choice, you want to be their second choice. You can no longer win by demonizing one person or demonizing the other side. Our current status quo system, the quickest way to win is by just saying, I'm not as bad as them.
Right.
And pointing, vote for me because I'm not as bad as them, which is a terrible way to run a system.
Well, you know, and we're talking about the future here. And one of the things that I know when I've talked to young people that they really want something to vote for.
Yes. The reality is that 61% of 18 to 24 year olds do not identify as a Republican or a Democrat.
That's right.
They want a system that they can fully participate in, and closed primaries don't allow for that. So we'll open things up to all voters, and then let's get some new parties. Let's have a truly multi-party democracy, which will be possible in the Alaska model, where you have four unique lanes in the general election. You could have four parties running their own candidates and on a level playing field. And that's really, really what we're pushing and hoping for.
You know, some of the opponents of ranked choice voting or majority choice voting have said that it leans a partisan direction. But when Alaska passed this, the very next election, they had a Democrat, an independent-minded Republican, and a MAGA Republican that all won in the same election using ranked choice voting. So we just need to remember that the people who oppose it are the ones who are going to lose power.
Yes. In red states, the misinformation is that it's a Trojan horse for Democrats. And in blue states, the misinformation is it's a Trojan horse for Republicans. It will make all of our elections more competitive. So there's truth in that. It will be more competitive, but it's not, ranked choice voting is not going to make red states blue or blue states red. That's just silly.
Quite frankly, that's the fodder of conflict profiteers.
Yes. Who can only see the world in blue or red, right? And we're trying to create a completely new paradigm. I should have started with the big picture values, Devlin, and you asked about the name change. Veterans for All Voters really reflects our values better. Like, we are truly fighting for all voters to be able to fully participate in all public elections. Sounds like a simple thing. Your average person on the street would say, sure, of course, but that's not true. And most of our states, if you're an independent voter, if you're not registered with one of the major political parties, you in some shape, form, or fashion will be treated like a second-class citizen. You may be able to participate in a limited way or not at all in primary elections, the first round of voting that determine 85% of our outcomes. You know, we get to November and people wonder, why are my choices so terrible? The real competition's already taken place and most people didn't even participate.
Right. Yeah, I actually had to register with a party because I live in a district that is reliably one party.
And you're in a closed primary state, Maryland.
I'm in a closed primary state. Well, Eric, this has been just such a pleasure. I'm going to close with an invitation for you and for everyone else who's listening to the podcast today. And this invitation comes from neuroscience. So we like to geek out a little bit on the politics here with Veterans for All Voters today. But let's geek out on the neuroscience for a little bit, because if we can spend 5 minutes a day just thinking about your future self and feel those feelings that include a sense of awe and wonder, what the neuroscience research shows is that we begin to subconsciously create that which we focus on. And so we have a choice. We can actually co-create this future that we prefer. And we can do that instead of choosing the dystopian options that are presented to us by the conflict profiteers.
Yes.
So thank you, Eric, very much for participating today. And that is my invitation to all of us, is to spend 5 minutes a day envisioning the future we want that doesn't suck.
Yes. So,
it makes it worth waiting through this crap we have to go through for the next few years.
We are going to pull through these dark days and things are definitely going to be better. So thanks for all the good work you're doing.
In closing, I'd like to thank Eric Bronner for being our guest today. I hope you find his story of service inspiring and hopeful. I'd also like to thank you for giving a damn about our nation. We may be a terrified nation today, but we can do better. We can save the USA. Join me next time.
So that's it for today's episode of Terrified Nation. Head on over to iTunes or wherever you listen and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week who posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $15,000 private VIP day with Debbie Lynn Molyneux herself. Be sure to head on over to TerrifiedNationPodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Debbie Lynn's gift and join us on the next episode.